This is a Pinball News production.
Okay, hi.
Gary already asked, but I'd like to see it once again. After seeing this video, who is familiar with Time Shock? Can I see some hands? Okay, we're in good company here. I see some fans and some other interested. Time Shock is a virtual pinball simulation game from 1997. And it, as Gary told already, it sold millions of copies worldwide. And we are Silver Castle Pinball, and we are turning this virtual video pinball simulation into a real pinball machine. Now, let me introduce the team to you after I've made a few announcements. Please, there will be plenty of room to ask your questions after the presentation. So please hold your questions so I can keep the flow. And, well, I'd like to thank Gary Flower for arranging the opportunity for us to be here today. It was very last minute, but we're proud to be here today and to tell you something about our project. Now, the team from Silver Castle Pinball is, first, we have Jurgen. He's the initiator of this project. He's the man with the mission. He's a businessman. He has owned and sold different ICT companies. And besides that, he's a pinball lover. He has a beautiful game room with a pristine collection of more than 20 pinball machines. Jurgen is also present here today. Jurgen, raise your hand. That's Jurgen. Okay, then we go to Ruben. Ruben is our mechanical engineer designer. He's very experienced in SolidWorks, has deep knowledge of materials and manufacturing methods. And he's the one responsible for the beautiful renderings you may have seen in the Pinball News article. He's also here with us today, Jurgen, of Ruben, sorry, over there. Now, next up is Jonathan. He's our artist. He's responsible for making the playfield art shine in real life. He has extended knowledge of coloring and typography. He also did the design of our logo. And when he's not designing, he likes to play Star Trek. Next up is Marina. Marina is responsible for customer relations and communication. She's a social media expert, has earned her stripes working at the national broadcast. And because she always wears black and brings positive energy, she is our mistress of the light. So, and then there's me. I'm the technical guy, I'm the technician. I'm responsible for building the prototypes and preparing for production. I have a comprehensive technical background in the fields of electronics, programming, metalworking, and woodworking. I like to build stuff. And I've been a pinball addict since 1987, when I bought my first machine, which was an electromechanical William Stardust, and I've had many since. I'm also a technical trainer by profession, so that's why I'm doing this presentation. So there you have the team of Silver Castle Pinball. Now let me tell you where we're from. We are from the Netherlands. And the Netherlands is a small country in Europe. It's next to Germany and Belgium, and across the sea is England. And when I say small country, there are 70 million people living in the Netherlands, and I looked it up, there are 370 million here in America, so that's a big difference. Now, the capital of the Netherlands is Amsterdam, you may know it. You see it in the middle there, and some 50 miles below Amsterdam is the city of Utrecht. And, well, that's where the Silver Castle is. That's where Silver Castle Pinball is working on Time Shock. Now, the Netherlands is the same as Holland. The name Holland comes from the Netherlands, and it has to do with some historical stuff. We're not going to dive into it, but it's enough to know that Holland comes from the Netherlands. And I found a map on the internet of Northeast America with all the places called Holland. So it seems to me we are familiar over here. Now, you may know the Netherlands from windmills, wooden shoes. We don't walk in them, but it's good for tourists. Tulips, and some may know it from other stuff. But you may also know the Netherlands from Pinside, which is developed and hosted from the Netherlands by Robin and Martijn van Maurik. Pinball Magazine by Jonathan Joosten. And In-Depth Glossy Magazine, also from the Netherlands. Last year, it was here, the Matrix, Amazing Conversion from a Johnny Mnemonic, by Gerrit van der Zand and Dennis van der Pas, also from the Netherlands. And of course, we have the guys from Dutch Pinball, last year with the Bride of Pinbot, and this year, the Big Lebowski announcement. And then we have JP de Win, for the LCD artist for Jersey Jack. So, as you can see, we have a vibrant pinball community in the Netherlands. And that's very motivating in this kind of projects we do. So, in conclusion to this introduction, we are Silvercaster Pinball. We are from the Netherlands, which is also called Holland. We have a vibrant pinball community, but most importantly, we are turning Time Shock into a real pinball machine. Now, today we're going to talk about a journey, our journey, to turn this virtual video game into a real pinball machine. And let me start by telling you something about Time Shock, some facts and figures. Time Shock is a game designed by Pro Pinball in 1997, almost 20 years ago. It was one out of a series of four. And it sold millions of copies worldwide. And even today, it's considered one of the best pinball simulations. It has an excellent and very deep rule set, a good soundtrack, and, of course, very good ball physics. Founding father is Adrian Barrett, Englishman. And right now, he's working on a new release of Time Shock, the Ultra Edition in HD. And our software, our game, is based on the newest version. And he cooperates in a project in making it a very good experience. Now, the storyline in short of Time Shock, for those who don't know the game or don't remember it after 20 years, there's been a Time Shock. Now it's chaos in the universe, and it's up to you to fix it. Now, on a casual Friday night, playing pinball with some friends, that seems like a noble task to me. To restore the chaos in the universe, you need the crystal. But the crystal's been shattered, and it's in different time zones. So you have to travel to four time zones, collect the fragments of the crystal, and to do so, you use the time machine. When you completed the crystal, you can start the wizard mode, which is Dawn of Time. In short, that's the storyline, and it's well integrated into the machine. Now, the crystal is the big, green, beautiful, shiny thing there in the middle, and it has a scoop in front, and it either diverts the ball back onto the play field or into the crystal. The crystal can rotate, spin around, and it can divert the ball in four different wireframes, which are the locks for the time zones. So that's the first toy on the Time Shock game. The other toy is the time machine, and the time machine is used to lock balls for multi-ball. It has a magnetic arm, and it puts the ball in the basket down below there. So these are the two main toys of the game. Now, some features of the game. As I told you, there are four time zones: ancient Rome, prehistoric age, the present, and the distant future. And in each time zone, you can play two modes, which makes a total of eight modes. And in each time zone, there is a secret mode. There are six different multi-balls. There are combos, there are quick shots. You can collect souvenirs up to 20. There's a mystery, there's a video mode, there is even a secret video mode, there are super jets, there's a mode called Find the Cow. There's Midnight Madness, which is a multi-ball frenzy, a 10-ball multi-ball frenzy for 2 minutes.
Oh.
And there's even more than we could fit on this sheet. So you can see it's a very good and action-packed game, and it's good for the home environment. I think you won't get tired of it soon. Now, to pack all these features in a playfield, the playfield needs some real estate. And therefore, TimeShock is a wide-body game. I already told you of the two main toys, the crystal in the middle and the time machine below. And further, there are three ramps, 14 wireframes, including two wireframes within the crystal, three flippers, three pop bumpers, seven physical locks, and in order to operate, the ball thrower needs to have 10 balls installed. Now, some more technical stuff. This machine needs 44 drivers to operate 34 coils, 8 flashers, and 2 motors. In comparison, I was at the factory tour from Stern past Thursday, and they gave me a fact sheet, and on the fact sheet stood that a Stern game could use up to 24 coils. So you see, in terms of hardware demand, this is a complex game. There are 79 switches on the playfield, in the machine, 66 on the playfield and 13 in the cabinet. It uses 118 lamps, 84 on the playfield, 2 in the cabinet for your start and launch button, and there are 32 control GI lamps. So once again, in terms of hardware, it is no ordinary machine. Now, let's get to our journey. First, let me take a sip of water. Sorry, are they going to be?
Are they going to be LED?
Ah, good question. Can I answer that at the end of the presentation? The question was if it uses LEDs. So we're going to get into it at the end of the presentation. So our journey from digital to real-life pinball. The journey begins some 2 years ago. It was a beautiful Saturday morning in August. Jürgen was thinking about TimeShock for almost 10 years. There's even a post of him on Rec Games Pinball from 2003. Why is nobody building this machine? So 10 years later, on Saturday morning, after a hard week of work, he stood up and take a walk on his wooden shoes, passing some windmills, maybe some tulip fields, maybe smoking a joint for some inspiration. Of course, that's a joke. There's nothing smoking at the Silver Castle Pinball, except maybe for some power driver board, which we short-circuit. Anyhow, Jürgen thought, well, okay, right now I'm in a position to make it possible. Why don't I email Adrian and see if he can work out an arrangement. So on that Saturday morning, Jürgen emailed Adrian from, hey, I'd like to build TimeShock. How do you feel? And already at 12 in the afternoon, the NDA was signed, a non-disclosure agreement. And the months that followed, they worked out the license deal, the details of the license deal. And while they are working out details of the license, Jürgen started writing a business plan. And I'm a technician, I don't know what's in there, but whatever is needed in the business plan, he put it in there. Facts, figures, finance, I don't know. He wrote a business plan, and at the end, he sees it was feasible to build this machine. So he started forming a team. At first, only a technician and a designer, and later on, customer support, customer relations, and an artist. Now, part of the deal was for us to get access to the game assets, for example, artwork and the 3D models from the original game. Now, let's take a look at the game's 3D object models. This is the original game, an object model of the original game. This is one of our assets. This is the source from WeWork, where we work from. Don't bother the gray color. For us, it's about dimensions and parts. And things like coloring and texture and light effects are different processes. Now, let me take a sidestep here. You see here the play field, and let me take a sidestep. This is a typical pinball play field. It happens to be one of my favorites, but we all recognize a typical pinball play field with all the play field action going on. You have your flippers, your pop bumpers, drop targets, a scoop, diverters, ramps, lamps. And in order to operate, we know that there has to be a lot of stuff going on underside of the playfield. For this particular game, it looks like this. You have your coils, your motors, your wiring, your lamps. So in order to perform the action on the top of the playfield, we know there is all kinds of mechanical and electrical stuff needed on the underside of the playfield. Now let's get back to the 3D model. This is our 3D model. Suppose we can lift up this virtual playfield and see what's underneath. So we're going to lift up this playfield and look what's designed underneath. Now, there you have it. There's nothing besides from some outlines for the inserts and the throw holes. The big advantage of making a video game is that you only have to worry about the top side of the playfield. You just program it like you like it, and you don't have to design mechanisms or lamps or wiring looms. So this has been one of our first and main challenges. For every part on the top of the playfield, we have to find the counterpart that belongs in the bottom of the playfield to perform the action. So for every coil, every lamp, every post, there's something needed on the underside. And of course, for every pinball you design, you do that. But in our case, we are bounded to the playfield layout on the top side. We all know that the games we are used to play have all a story. There's sometimes I spoke to Dennis Nordman a few days ago about Whitewater, and I asked him what is left out of Whitewater in the process, and he told me there was some flipper first intended on the apron, but due to costs, it was cut out. And most flippers have this kind of stories, that during prototyping, things are left out because they're not feasible. And in our case, everyone rightfully expects to look the game precisely as Time Shock, as the virtual Time Shock. So we are bounded by design, by the design of the virtual Time Shock. We don't have the option to skip something because the costs are too high or because it doesn't fit. And that's part of the joy we have in it. We have to find all kinds of solutions to make sure the Time Shock looks as good as the original. Okay, so for everything you see here on the playfield, we do our best to find the best solution possible to make it fit also on the underside. Now, this is a rendering from the playfield on the underside so far. You see all the mechanisms. There's no wiring or lamps here. It's just about placing the mechanisms in the right place. Now, back to the 3D object models. So we got the assets, and it's a model in a program called 3DS Max, and that's software to make computer games. And you can do excellent things with it. But we soon found out it's not suitable for manufacturing. You can't make an export of this software with a technical drawing from which you can go to a manufacturer and say, hey, I would like this part being made. So we cannot use it to make our own parts. A program that is suitable for making parts is SolidWorks. So we had to redraw every part of the original machine in SolidWorks. Every bolt, nut, every coil, every ball guide, every post, every wireform had to be completely redrawn in SolidWorks. And we measured it all up, even all the standard assemblies, the flipper units, the slingshots, the pop bumpers, we all measured them up and put them in SolidWorks. Now, Ruben did an excellent job putting it all there, but it was a tedious and time-consuming job. It took him over 6 months to completely redraw the table in SolidWorks. Okay, so we have the game in SolidWorks. We are now able to manufacture parts, so we start building the first whitewood. The first whitewood was an exact copy of the simulation, and we soon found out it was 1/4 inch too wide and 1/2 inch too long to fit in a whitebody cabinet. So we start adjusting some parts to make it fit. Also, we had a problem with the height, and especially with the time machine. In order to use the time machine on the proper scale, or the scale of the original, we had to make a hole in the glass to make it fit. So we had to scale down the time machine. And of course, if you're building a video game, you don't have to worry about the mounting system of your playfield. You just put it in the cabinet and it sits there. But a mounting system does take some space on the underside of the playfield, and it may interfere with some assemblies. So that's one thing we had to find out, how to make a proper mounting system. Now, there have been a number of stages so far. There's been the first whitewood, which was used for dimensioning and parts. After that, we built the second whitewood, and that was for the flow and the shots, this getting the good feel to the game. Then there was the third whitewood, and that's the whitewood we have now. We have tested all the changes from previous whitewoods, and we now are testing our own mechanical devices. The fourth whitewood will be about artwork, lighting, and a software test. And of course, in every new whitewood, we evaluate the previous changes. Now, let me give you some example of general challenges we faced. And they have to do with mechanical action, ball physics, visual realism, and producibility. And for each, I have an example. Mechanical action. I don't know if you can see it in the back, but in the back of the game, in a red circle, is a diverter. And it sits on a plateau which is above the play field. The ball comes from behind the back plate, and it either is diverted in the spiral kind of wire form down below, or it goes straight to the right flipper. This diverter is a lever coming out of the, well, it seems to come out of the side of the cabinet, but there's a shaft going through the play field, and there needs to be a mechanism there. Well, in reality, there is no room for a diverter there. First, it's too close to the side of the cabinet, and the shaft is going through the right orbit of the game. So we had to come up with another solution there. And we did some brainstorming, and we tested and tried different options. And the end solution we made was a diverter on the back plate. There was enough space to make a diverter there. It was small, but we could make it fit. And well, you see that the ball now in the down position is diverted below, and when it's up, it goes straight to the right flipper. Because there are a lot of wireframes there, we made it look like a wireframe, and we think it blends in perfectly. This is one example of mechanical action we had to translate from the original game to a real pinball machine. Next is about physics. This is a Twilight Zone playfield, and this particular one is very dirty. I don't know if you can see it, but it is. There's a lot of dust on the plastics and on the playfield. And of course, you want a playfield to operate good, even if it's dirty. Of course, a clean game plays better, but when a playfield is dirty, you will also want to make sure it plays good. Now, this game must have had thousands of plays. Let's look at our virtual game after you've played thousands of games. Now, that seems obvious. Of course, a video game won't wear out. There is no dust coming. But let's take a look at this. This is a drawing from the original game. And you can see the bulkite that's behind the crystal. And you see two red lines there. In the original game, the angle of the ball guide was too shallow. Was so shallow that when the game gets dirty, you would get ball hang-ups there. So we adjusted the angle to the proper angle to make sure that when you play the game in real and it gets dirty, it would still operate good. This is, once again, one simple example for how we had to change some components to make it work in real life. Another example is about visual realism. Here you see the original artwork, and next to that is the artwork we have in the machine. And one thing you may notice is there are all kinds of holes in the right artwork, and that's of course because we now use post to mount everything. But in general, they look the same. And let me zoom in to a specific area in front of the crystal. The upper image is the original, and the lower image is how we made it. And you see that we made some changes to make it suitable for real life. The inserts are moved slightly to be able to mount a target. And the artwork is a bit adjusted because there is a scoop hole. Another thing for us to take into account is producibility. We don't want to make one prototype. We know you all want to buy the machine, so we want to make lots of them. And we want them to be good. So we have to think about producibility of parts. And let me take an example with the crystal. The crystal has to be sturdy enough. The material has to be sturdy and yet a bit flexible to withstand air balls. And therefore, Ruben made some, what was the word again, Ruben? Supports, yes, that's the design part. Ruben made some supports within on the inside of the crystal to make it sturdy. Of course, we have to think about how we're going to mount it. So, on the underside of the crystal, we made screw holes to mount it to a base plate. And we wanted it to look good. We want to do justice to the original game, so we want to make sure it looks good. And if we want to mass produce, we need to make a mold to make this kind of plastics. And when you need a mold, you have to be sure to get your plastic out of the mold. Now, let me explain that. If you have an orange and you slice it exactly in half and you put one half in your hand, you can imagine that you can take it out. But if you slice it in 3/4 and you take the biggest part in your hand and you put your hand firmly on it, you can't get it out. And your hand is the mold here. So for each part, you have to make sure you can mold it, get it out of a mold. So we made some slight adjustments so we can mass produce the crystal. Once again, one example, there are more plastic parts that we adjusted. Now, how far are we? Okay. Let's look at the crystal. It's the centerpiece of the game. And in the game, it looks like this. And here you see what we designed to make it work in real life. And starting from the bottom, there's of course a motor needed to make it rotate. The motor needs a bracket to mount it to the playfield. There needs to be a shaft. The shaft needs a coupling to a base plate, all designed. And on the base plate, we have to mount the wireforms. Then there's the inner crystal, which is encapsulated by the outer crystal. Now there you see the conversion from the big green shiny thing in the virtual game to how we make sure that it operates in the real world. So, and I think we're coming to an end of this presentation. And in conclusion, after this presentation, we're still self-acosted pinball. We are making Time Shock in real life. Time Shock is complex in terms of hardware demands. It's a feature-rich game. But we want to make sure that despite all challenges we face and we are determined to overcome, that in the end, you could play a real Time Shock machine. Now, unfortunately, Expo came a bit too early for us to bring a machine. We were only contacted and convinced by Kerry to come here, I believe, 1 month ago. So we worked hard past weeks to complete a third prototype, a third whitewood. And past Sunday, we got the last parts in, and we mount all it. And we made a small video of the main shots of Time Shock. It's made with a mobile phone, so it's not top-notch quality, but we would like to give you an ID of where we are now. Okay, so I come to the end. If you've got any questions. Yes.
What system, are you planning to use the PROC system to translate the original software over to, or another system?
Right now we're using PROC. We don't know if it's still in the end game, but at this point in time we're using PROC.
How much of the original software do you plan on using? Because I remember Pro Pinball designed an entire operator's menu, which you don't exactly need for video games.
Well, there was an operator menu in the original game. Does that answer your question?
I'm wondering how much of that you plan on using.
The question was how much. I don't know if you heard you exactly good, but the question was concerning the software. Well, Adrian Barrett is working together with us to make sure all that is belongs in a real pinball table is adjusted in the software.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask the same thing because it's got, even though it was a home video game, they duplicated kind of a Williams operator menu, where you can test the coils and test the switches and do tests on the crystal. I'm assuming the intention is to do that as well as the challenge mode, the tournament mode that they included.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry. Do you have a time frame for manufacturing?
Yes, we have. The question was, do we have a time frame for manufacturing? We are planning to be production ready in summer 2015, so next year.
We're going to have a prototype here. That's the goal. Next year, it's going to be a prototype on Expo.
Are you taking pre-orders?
Are we taking pre-orders? Well, I'm going to hand it over to the businessman.
Not yet. We're not yet taking pre-orders, no. We might start taking pre-orders later on, but it's my goal to always have an option, and it's also a set of Bill News article, to only buy the machine in full when we are start big production. So don't pre-order money needed. We might offer pre-order machines, which may have additional feature or like an edition or something like that. But there will always be an option to only buy when we're going to start production.
Could everybody hear that? Okay. Other questions?
Where will the game be manufactured in Justin?
Good question. Excellent question. We're working, what shall I say? We have different options right now. And the details are not yet finalized. Jürgen, yeah. Can you?
The final arrangement hasn't been made. So I wish I could tell you, but I'm sure you understand that I can. And once the final arrangement has been made, you'll all work with personnel.
So, Paul, how would you determine the quantities for ordering parts and such without the pre-orders?
Well, what I meant to say, maybe I wasn't clear, is that we will have the, well, you can call it a pre-order, but you will only have to order when we are starting production, when we're
making the order.
When we actually start production, so when the when we start ordering our products, then the games will have to be paid. But we are not going to be pre-ordering now, so we are not going to tell you we're going to need $500 now, $1,000 in 2 months.
I think we're not going to take your money unless we're sure we can start production.
Yeah. That's. Are you saying that you'll ask for payment when you can give a delivery date in the very near future?
Yeah, something like that.
Or when they know they're going forward.
Yep.
Yeah, when we know we're going to produce, right, then we're going to start taking pre-orders.
But my question is different. It's about you're going to have to place an order with a company that does your wire forms.
Yeah.
And tell them we're needing this custom wire form in a quantity of fill in the blank.
Yeah.
How do you know what quantity to tell them so they'll make it for you to have it in time for when you start production?
Okay. Well, the question is, how do we know how many parts to order if we're not doing pre-orders? We are not going to produce the machine by the hundreds at the same time. We're going to probably ramp it up. So maybe have 20 machines to start with, put them out in the wild like Williams did back then, or have a few homeowners who are dedicated to test the machine with us, and then we will only order those parts for those machines. And when this process is going on, pre-orders will start because we know we're going to produce. And on the second batch, which will be larger, we know how many parts to order. Yeah. I think his exact words were "Thank God I'm honored" or something like that, along those lines. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but yeah. Adrian is I don't know if you know, Adrian is the guy who is a spiritual father of Time Shock and all the other pro pinball games, the web, Big Race USA and Fantastic Journey. He's been working closely with us. He's been great at delivering us all the assets, anything we'd need. I'd ask him for the translight. Well, next day I'd have to translight, and it's amazing to work with him. Yeah, it's a dream of his to, and he said this publicly as well, to have this become a reality. Yeah.
For those that are not familiar with the game, one thing that makes this game great for an experienced pinball person, but not someone not familiar, is that a lot of the original rules and features were reminiscent of the very best Williams games. A lot borrows from Attack from Mars.
Yep.
There's elements of Star Trek Next Generation, a little bit of Terminator 2, Magnet like Black Knight 2000,
yep,
and even a little Indiana Jones. So it's like your A-list games. This feels like one of them.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, maybe you should come up. Yeah.
Good marketing. About your question about LEDs, I think the trend in pinball today is using LEDs. And we discussed, should we use incandescent or LEDs? And it also depends on the final hardware system we decide on. But we want it to look good. So we only do LEDs when it comes out great. Other questions? Okay. Oh, Martin.
Are there any changes to Time Shop in the Ultra Edition? And if there are they included in your game?
Well, if they are, they're included in our game, I guess, but...
Yeah, I don't know. There are changes, but mainly to the models, and so not to the gameplay. And we've always been working with the models from the Ultra HD version. And a good example, I don't know if you can show it, but it's the Crystal. Yeah. If you look at the Crystal, you can see that it has facets, distinct facets on the top side. And the original game, the original models, which we also have, didn't have those. And there's other features. The Time Machine has changed slightly as well. But we're going to use the new models. Yeah.
Are there any plans on probably producing some of the other programming
There you go.
Of course, a good question, yeah. And I figured that one was coming. But... I can't tell you. We want to do more, but you know, it's to do with licensing and talks with Adrian. And but if the opportunity is there and Time Shock sells well and we don't fall off or we don't fall dead doing this, then we are intending to do more after this.
Have you all designed the 10-ball ball trap yet?
No. No, it's a challenge. Yeah. The main challenge is that the
bill acceptors.
The bill acceptor and the coin. They're in the way.
The ball drop.
Yeah.
They're in the way.
Yeah. So we've got we've already had many ideas, which none of them work, but. We tried stacking balls, and we tried to have them flow in a wire form like this, but all of them had issues. So, and we've got another idea now, which I'm not going to share, but we hope that one will work. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Well, why do you have a game where the ball jumps in the middle of the game, and then you feed somewhere? I remember correctly, one of the games that they have this.
Could be an option, yeah. But there's a lot of real estate in the or a lot of parts everywhere. So you have to have something that's, yeah.
Well, that's good. You're thinking with us.
Yeah,
that's good.
Beyond this, you know, production, what's the kind of end goal or future goal for Silvercast? Continue to try to bring virtual to life, or is this try to
We're first gonna get good at building a pinball machine, and when we are confident that we are, we'll see what our options are. Yeah.
What do you guys think the price range is going to compare to those newest?
Yeah, that's a good question, and this one was coming, of course.
What is the question?
The question is the price range of the machine. We've got a challenge that not many other manufacturers have, is that everyone who's going to buy Time Shock probably will know Time Shock and knows all the RAMs, the Time Machine, the Crystal, and they want and rightfully expect every part to be in there that they know from the game. So where other manufacturers can decide to, well, the machine will cost 7,000 euros for some or dollars, and they start designing the machine, they can decide later on, well, this feature is cool, but you know, it's going to cost us an extra $500, so let's scrap it. We can't. So until our bill of materials is final, I can't really talk pricing yet. I guess that's going to conclude it then.
Okay, thanks for your attention. And we got some keyfobs for you here.